Blog Talk Radio.
In the beginning was the beat, and the beat was the rhythm of God, and the rhythm of God is the harmony of humanity, and where there is harmony, there is peace.
Brother Shabaka, I'm your host, and we want to talk about building a global cooperative economic platform for people of African descent. We'll be right back right after the music selection.
In the beginning was the beat of the drum, which began in the beginning to beat freedom.
People to self-determination, liberation, sovereignty. Good evening, family, and welcome to Dare to Win, the Us Lifting Us weekly radio program that airs every Thursday evening from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Dare to Win is the place where we have a sobering conversation about the economic plight of Black people and the imperative that we build the global economic machinery that will free us and once again put us on the path of making history. We are Us Lifting Us, have developed an exact methodology on how to build this machinery and pass it forward to our children and future generations. To join the conversation this evening, call 929-477-2789 and press 1 on your phone dial. And if you to make a comment or ask a question, and if you wish to join us by computer, just go to our website. That is www.usliftingus, all one word as it sounds, uslifting us.com. Click on the Ulu Radio tab, and then click on the Listening Live Radio. As I said, my name is Brother Shabaka, and I will be your host. This evening, I am joined by Brother Kambizi, who, like myself, is a board member of Ulu, and in fact, he's one of the original founders of Us Lifting Us. Greetings, Brother Kambizi. How are you feeling this evening, and do you have a few words to offer to our listening audience?
Greetings, Brother Shabaka.
Always good to be with you, and I'm feeling fine. Excited about tonight's discussion. So much going on in our world, and we are poised to build something very important, something lasting, because what really is going on around us is the movement of one economic model to another economic model. It looks a little messy. There are downturns in the economy. It's a lot of confusion and angst. But emerging out of this chaotic ferment is the possibility and the opportunity to build a sustainable economic model that will carry us through the 21st century and into the 22nd and beyond. So, yes, we have our work cut out for us, and we're up to the task.
Thank you, brother. You know, ever since the time of Garvey, a lot of us had romanticized building a global economy with you know, of African peoples globally all over the world. In this 21st century, give the listening audience, our listeners, our family, some ideas what you're talking about, particularly when you talk about this changing. What are the signs of the changing, and how might we be on board so that we don't go down with the ship, you know, but stay afloat?
That's an excellent question. What has happened is there have been several economic paradigm shifts over the last several hundred years. The human family has gone from slavery. From hunting and gathering to a period of enslavement, and then from there to a period of feudalism, and then feudalism gave birth to industrial capitalism, and capitalism now is disintegrating and allowing for the creation, the coming forward of various systems where the masses of people control the means of production. Some call this socialism or communism. I think Mwalimu Julius Nyerere in Tanzania was very prescient when he talked about Ujamaa as a cooperative model for African people. And so that's the historical moment in which we find ourselves. And we realize that the task that the ancestors have called us to is to build a global cooperative economic platform for people of African ancestry. And so the first order of business is this idea of building, developing the conceptual framework and relationships necessary to create a sustainable reality for African people. Brother Shabaka, I don't think anyone would argue that the reality we find ourselves in is extremely tenuous. It's very volatile, dangerous, hostile, toxic, and we as a people find ourselves in a constant state of reacting to the various forces and pressures coming against us, whether it's Chinese doing major loan projects on the African continent, whether it's the various movements in the United States that are threatening black security with this rise of fascism and white supremacy, or this re-rise of white supremacy, not only in the U.S. but throughout Europe. And so we are faced with a situation where we must build systems that help us to thrive and protect ourselves. And in other words, we have to get to a place of self-sufficiency where we are able to feed, clothe, shelter ourselves, provide energy, have access to clean food, clean water, and air. And the exciting part about all of this, Brother Shabaka, I think, is we get a chance to re-envision how we want to relate to one another. We in Us Lifting Us have placed at the heart of our value system the principles of Ma'at: truth, justice, righteousness, order, balance, harmony, and reciprocity. And we've also intertwined that with the Nguza Saba, Umoja, unity, Kujichagulia, self-determination, Ujima, collective work and responsibility, Ujamaa, cooperative economics, Nia, purpose, Kuumba, creativity, and Imani, faith. So we are changing the way we relate one to another. We're doing away with the negative name-calling and the disrespecting of our women. We're striving to be honest as how we talk to each other, transparent in our financial dealings. We are reshaping how we carry ourselves on the planet. And so we have a dual task, one of organizing, getting out, talking to our people, sharing our ideas, and at the same time, building the organization that can carry this economic work forward. Let me pause there. You may have questions, or I may have said something that has triggered another thought.
Yes, you did trigger at least a thought in me, and hopefully maybe the listening audience too. And family, if you want to join this conversation, you know, you can always join by dialing 929-477-2789. That's 929-477-2789. Press 1 on your phone, and that'll place you in the queue to be picked up, and I'll see that, and I'll give you an opportunity to ask your question or make a comment to Brother Kambizi. Yeah, as I was saying, listening to you talk, I'm real curious about this thing you said, the declining of capitalism, whether we like it or not. Do you really believe that some people are entrenched with the capitalist philosophy? And I want to relate this to a number of scholars and people we might look up to talk about the need to group economics, entrepreneurship, and a few other things. Could you place that in context to what you're talking about in building this global cooperative economic platform? Obviously, what ULU is all about and trying to strive to. To deliver.
The most recent UN information, the UN project on climate, has said that we have 10 years or less to reduce carbon emissions below 50%, or we're going to find ourselves in a situation of climate collapse. In other words, we will reach a tipping point where it is irreversible to pull us back from the brink of severe and very catastrophic climate change. Now, given that as the reality, you would think there would be a sense of urgency in terms of creating legislation, regulations, trying to quickly and rapidly build alternative sources of energy. But to your point about capitalism being entrenched, our current capitalist economic engine is driven by fossil fuel. We are addicted to oil and oil's byproducts. It's so bad that there is certain amounts of we know that if we go beyond certain amount of carbon emissions into the environment, that instead of reducing global warming, we will in fact accelerate global warming. But here's the thing, Shabaka. These oil companies, their portfolios are based on the inventory of oil that is still in the ground. And so therefore, even though if they drill for that oil or however they get access to it, in order for them to realize their profit margins, they have to dredge up the oil that's still in the ground. Now, that is absolute insanity. You know that you've got to get under 50% carbon emission, and yet and still, because of your profit profile, this inventory that is still in the ground, you are committed to drilling and bringing it up. And that's why someone like Trump in the United States or Boris Johnson in the UK are not only silly, but they're dangerous, pulling back regulations. So instead of a sane and sensible approach and global dialogue about how do we come to grips with this very pressing problem, because of the entrenchment of fossil fuel industry, the politicians that they have in their pocket are doing their bidding, even though it threatens the very existence of the human species. It's not just right. Fossil fuels, because tied to the fossil fuel industry is also Big Pharma. So we have the pharmaceutical companies tied into that economic system. And we have agribusiness tied into that economic system. Then we have the whole chemical industry tied into that system. So all of the major economic engines of capitalism in the 21st century are all tied to fossil fuel. And that's why it's so hard to have a conversation about a transition to alternative energy sources. Well, whether that goes forward or not, the truth of the matter is that whole infrastructure is crumbling as we speak, and we see the indications in terms of failing health. We see hundreds of thousands of people being laid off. We understand that in the next 5 years or so, there will probably be another major economic downturn. So the social decline is accelerating, and that's what I mean by saying that as capitalism continues its downward spiral, we are positioned to have the opportunity to build healthy systems that can fill the void left by this declining capitalist economic system. And that's, if we're not looking at it that way, then what we and Us Lifting Us are encouraging us to do is to step back a minute and say, it's not woe is me, but actually we find ourselves in a very ideal moment when we organize and put ourselves in cooperative economic models to take advantage of the chaos and allow our people to rise and to thrive in the midst of a very chaotic situation.
I hear you, brother. So I got to give up my Hummer, huh? It's just not doing it.
You're going to look kind of funny in a Prius, but I'd much rather see you driving that than the Hummer.
I hear you. Look, you said a little earlier, and family, if you wish to join this conversation, we'd love to hear from you. This is a very important issue, you know, and Ulu is taking a position and laid out a strategy for us to be able to overcome this. And I want to get into that a little bit. But you said earlier, you know, the capitalists had laid down the structure, had laid down a structure of global marketplaces or commerce. All right. And I guess implied in that is that when we look back at what the Honorable Marcus Garvey was trying to do in the 21st century, as capitalism declined, the marketplace is still there. Could you speak to that a little bit in terms of how you see this trend, this global cooperative economic structure that tends to tie and bring Africans together by trade? Could you talk to that a little bit?
Well, you know, sure. It's interesting. At the turn of the 20th century, the early 1900s, America and much of Europe, for that matter, were agrarian societies. The cities were relatively small, and most people made their living on the farm. As a result of industrial capitalism, that spurred the growth of the formation of cities, because in the cities was where the factories were located. And the factories were these huge plants, blocks and blocks and blocks, that brought thousands of workers together. I think General Motors, at the height of its automobile production, probably employed 100,000 workers in their plants. And so what that did was that drove urbanization as a phenomenon. People were pulled from the countryside and the rural areas into the cities. The cities grew by leaps and bounds. They had to build housing for these workers, and it created a new class of people in society, that is the working class. These were people who no longer worked on the farm. They came in at 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock in the morning. They punched the clock. They worked 8, 9, 10 hours as a shift. But where before people had been separated and isolated, now we have people concentrated together in small places or small spaces. You've got mass communication to give them information. So you've got newspapers and radio, and you're creating this hotbed of new thinking. Well, just as capitalism created that urban phenomena and brought together and really brought into being a so-called working class, capitalism also, as it expanded across the country and around the world, and again through the internet and mass communication and the cell phone, it then extended its tentacles where the entire world now has been made a marketplace. And so what it has bequeathed to the next generation is, now instead of people being confined to small village markets, shopping areas, there's this global internet where you can pick up a cell phone and order any product that you desire, and it can be delivered to your doorstep in 48 hours. So we really do live in a global marketplace, and that's a great thing, because in that global marketplace, we can exchange products, we can exchange ideas, we can exchange information, we can build relationships. So to your question about, you know, the vision of Marcus Garvey, the technology and the growth, the very rapid expansion of capitalism has created for us this environment where we can introduce our own ideas, our own products, our own entrepreneurs, and that's exactly what's happening. Our younger folks who are in the music industry, who are innovators in technology, are bringing new ideas, and these ideas are finding acceptance in the global marketplace. So we have become a global market, and that this conversation that we're having right now can be heard anywhere on the planet. And I think both of us are of an age where 20 years ago, that really wasn't something that we thought about. You know what I'm saying, brother? I mean, if we had, I remember when, you know, the Muslims were selling newspapers on the corner, and that was the primary means of getting a lot of information to the black community. Now we're on the internet, we're on social media, and ideas are whipping around the planet in nanoseconds. And so that's exciting. You know, we really have to up our game so that we can run as fast as the technology allows us to communicate.
Right. I hear you, brother. So it seemed like as capitalism declined and the marketplace or the infrastructure is there, you know, we get our game together, you know, we can fill that void because people will still need various products and services. It's just that they won't be so exploited, you know, as the current system that we're in does that. Family, if you wish to join this conversation, we'd like to hear from you. We'd like to hear about your experience. Were you a worker? Do you know about your parents, your grandparents who was on the farm, who later, you know, transitioned to the environment, the urban setting, become wage laborers, and how that impacted you? We'd like to hear from you. All right, if you wish to share with us your experience, dial 929-477-2789 and press 1 on your dialing pad and ask your question. Or if you just want to listen, just go to our website, www.usliftingus, as all one word, as it sounds, .com, and click on the Ulu Radio tab, and then you can listen. We're going to take a two-minute break, and then we'll be right back with our guest, Brother Kimbizi. And so we'll be right back. Shabaka, here with Brother Kimbizi, a board member of Ulu. And if you wish to join the conversation that we have, you can call us at 929-477-2789, press 1, and ask your question. I see that we have a caller. Let's go immediately to that caller. Caller, if your extension is 8912, the last four digits, you're on the air. What's your question? Tell us your name and where you're calling from, and then your question or comment.
Yes, this is Brother Kevin. I'm calling from Richmond. And thank you all for the
greetings, brother.
Another greetings, family. And thank you for another vital topic. Absolutely vital that we take control of the global and build this global economic platform. And I wanted to thank you for so many things that's already been brought up, and I know you got more. But just on some of the things that were said, was talking about being addicted to oil, and I know it's not limited to oil. That subject of our addiction, and you talked about being on the farm and then coming into the urban areas, these addictions that we have, we must maximize us building global cooperative platform, economic platform. We've got to have the courage instead of the sea and the waters being washed on us. We've got to have the courage to quickly let go of all of these addictions, or otherwise we're not going to be as effective in looking at maximum amount of sisters and brothers participating around the world.
Brother Sermon, you're breaking up pretty bad.
Sam? Okay.
You're breaking up
pretty
bad.
Yeah, you're breaking up a little bit.
Say it again?
Yeah, if you can be as clear as you are right now, that'll be good, but you were breaking up earlier.
I'm sorry. So I was speaking about the subject about the addiction to oil and addiction to so many other things, including food and lifestyle. And as we are speaking to maximize the number of sisters and brothers who participate in what you're talking about, we really got to have the courage to break free of the addiction. I'll just stop with that.
Okay, brother. Really appreciate that comment. Brother Kambizi, you have anything you would like to add to what Brother Thurman was talking about?
Yes, two things. One, we were talking about the global marketplace and the fact that the transportation and communication have become global and instantaneous. So now it's even easier than ever for people of African ancestry, whether they're on the continent, whether they're in the Caribbean or other parts of the diaspora or in the United States, to do business together, to do commerce with each other. The tools are at our fingertips, and that makes it very exciting. To Brother Thurman's comment about the ways that we have become addicted, this is a good point to mention that Us Lifting Us is annual meeting is March 13th and 14th of 2020 at the Interdenominational Theological Center in Atlanta, Georgia. And we're going to be talking exactly about how we thrive and survive in a hostile environment, and how we build and organize and deal with the addictions and the other things that that hold us back from being fully human and fully developed, and being the mighty race that Marcus Garvey called us. So that's the thing that we're most excited about right now, is that every time we have an annual meeting, we get to come together face to face as a people and look at the problems that are facing us and work out solutions that allow us to overcome them, and specifically how to build the cooperative economic platform that will enable us to survive the ultimate collapse of capitalism and really replace it with a far superior system. To Brother Thurman's point, one of the things that we address in our annual meeting is that very point. How do we address addictions and how do we wean ourselves off of behaviors that are self-destructive?
Yeah, brother, and I want to get into that a little bit more, but let me ask you this question too. And I don't want to assume anything right now, but you have raised, we gave a very clear picture of the structure that we're currently operating in, the capitalistic structure, and then how that has evolved. But now, for some of the family members who may not be familiar, or, you know, they may even be part of Hulu, but is still trying to get their hand or their head around this thing of cooperative. Could you say something? This cooperative name seems to be a key word. Can you say something about that? What specifically do you see that meaning? You mentioned the Yaguba Saba. You mentioned Ma'at. How does that stuff work together? Put that into a pot and churn it out for me.
Thank you, Brother Shabaka. You're absolutely right. You know, how do those values work in an economic system and then comes out to be something that feeds, clothes, and shelters people? So, in other words, the first thing, if we understand those values, in order for those values to be concretized, in order for them to be real, they have to have an economic system through which to work. And that's where a cooperative model is the only viable mechanism. Well, I won't say it's the only, but it's certainly a superior viable mechanism for that to happen. So what happens in a cooperative? Sisters and brothers come together and we pool our resources. That is, we put our money in the pot and we open businesses that we own collectively and control collectively. Now, in capitalism, when they want to start a business, they sell shares. And people who want to invest, they buy shares. So people may buy 1,000 shares or 10,000 shares or 100,000 shares or 1 or 2 shares. And in the capitalist corporate structure, the way power flows is whoever owns, for each share you own, that determines the number of votes that you get to exercise when it comes to policy making and decisions about running the corporation. So if I own 100,000 shares in a corporation, I have 100,000 votes. So when the annual meeting happens each year and all of the share owners come together, and whatever proposals are on the agenda get voted on, when I raise my hand to vote, that's 100,000 votes. If everyone else has fewer shares than me, then guess whose ideas get to dominate the day. A co-op is different. No matter how many units in a co-op I own, I only have one vote. So let's just say, Brother Shabaka, you own 10 co-op units in Us Lifting Us, and I own one co-op unit in Us Lifting Us. And we're at the annual meeting, and we have to make some decisions about the direction that we want to go in 2020. Well, when we come to the voting, you have a vote, I have a vote. So in terms of the power dynamic inside of a co-op, it's one person, one vote. That is truly democratic, and that's what is so exciting about operating through cooperatives. So the co-op is owned by the members. In other words, it's not a few people at the top calling all the shots. It's everybody together making decisions, arriving at consensus, and taking the best course of action for the group. So that's the most important thing that we want people to understand about a cooperative model. It's a group of people who collectively own the organization and make decisions that benefit everybody that's a member. And then it's operating a business. So if we, for example, are selling solar panels or solar generators, it has to be a quality product. It has to be priced competitively. But the idea is that because it's an African-centered business, we hope that African people throughout the world will purchase this product from this entity that they have a vested interest in. And that gives us a slight marketing edge as our people understand the power in operating through cooperative business models. For those people, for our listeners, we would invite you to go out on the internet and look at a cooperative in the northern region of Spain, the Basque region, Basque, and look, Google a company called Mondragon, Mondragon, Mondragon. They started with six worker owners in 1956, and in 20 years later, they had grown to over 200 companies, employing 80,000 plus worker owners, and generating in excess of $20 billion a year as a series of cooperative businesses linked together. And so that in their region, their standard of living is where everybody who used to be in almost abject poverty is now comfortably middle class. Nobody's super rich, but they all have the means to sustain themselves and an inheritance to pass on to their children by organizing themselves into a cooperative organization. That's what Us Lifting Us is doing in our community. I pause there for question and reaction, Brother Shabaka.
Yeah, I appreciate that, brother. If you wish to join the conversation, please join us at 929-477, and that's 2789. That's 929-477. 2789. We're going to take another music break, and when we come back, we're going to ask Brother Kambizi, because he spoke about the 2020 convention coming in, and he says that you know, a void needs to be filled, and there's an opportunity that, you know, Ulu is filling that void, and we're going to talk about some of the things to aid in the addiction that we have been experiencing, you know, under the system that we're in, so that we can begin to look more towards becoming a self-determined people. But we'll be right back in 2 minutes. Back, and yes, war, what is it good for? That's one of the other things associated with capitalism, and that is perpetual war in order to reduce any competition as people try to strive and regain strength so that they can take care of their own economy. These brothers have nothing but war. Brother, before you get into what you're talking, I see that we have another caller on the line, so we want to have that caller chime in on us. Caller whose last four digits are 1249, last four digits 1249. You're on the air. Please tell us your name, where you're calling from, and your question or comment.
Yes, greetings. Good evening, everyone. My name is Brother Eric, and I'm calling from the LaGrange area. One question I want to hear from Baba Kimbizi or whoever that can, and anybody's welcome to chime in. Just on the heels of Cafe Ulu, and I know that, you know, of course, this first cooperative enterprise that we ventured on. What were the lessons and the takeaways that we gained from that experience?
Thank you, brother, for the question. Brother Kimbizi, like to handle that?
Well, brother, that's an important question, and I'm glad you raise it. Anytime you strike out in a new direction, there are lessons that have to be learned, and I perhaps the first and foremost lesson with that is to make sure that we've done the complete research to understand all of the things that impact the business. Cafe Ulu, being a coffee shop and internet lounge, suffered greatly because there was not sufficient foot traffic in the area. You know, in business, the thing that they say, the mantra is location, location, location. And in our haste to get up and running as a business, we did not arrive at the best location for that type of business. And so the generation of sales wasn't sufficient to meet the overhead expenses. So what we realized is that we formed a research and development committee as a part of our business model. And any future ventures will be thoroughly researched, and we will make sure that we have the expertise to actually run the business so that it has the outcome that we want. Just so that you know, for example, we mentioned Mondragon. They did not operate a successful business the first 15 years of their existence. And then when they finally got all the pieces together, it took off. We hope not to take 15 years to figure it out, but we learned many, many valuable lessons from Cafe Ulu. And we have put in place systems so that we don't repeat those particular mistakes. I hope I answered your question, brother. Brother Shabaka, you may want to also give Brother Harry some of your thoughts on that.
Yeah, as you said, you know, a lot of times, you know, and even entrepreneurs that we come in contact with in this country, you know, everybody's excited. You know, they have an idea, they want to get that idea out. And we're oftentimes, as you said, Brother Kimbizi, you know, we're in a haste to put things together. All right, so we fall down. All right, when we fall down and it's not successful, you got to look back as, why did we fall down? And then you begin to, as you said earlier, we formulated a business research and development committee whose primary purpose would be to make assessment of those things, those opportunities that we see. So we just don't jump at the opportunity. We don't jump because we feel good. We have to realize that we're in an environment that is not directed to help us be successful. All right. And really, even within the European community, not everybody is going to be successful. You got a few billionaires, but other folks are struggling too in that community. We just happen to be down at the bottom, so we feel a little bit harder than most people. And that's all I would include is that the excitement got the best of us. And as we pursued, we came up with the reality, you know, sales wasn't matching, you know, the kind of expenses that we incurred. So we had to go back and see why. All right. Location, as you said, was primary factor of not getting that visibility. And of course, you know, you would need, if you're not getting that kind of visibility that you want, you would have to throw a lot of stuff into marketing to expose yourself so that you are visible sometimes in an area where you are not very visible. And I appreciate the question, brother. And, you know, we got a lot of things coming. And that directs us right now to the 2020 convention. Brother Kambizi, you want to say a little bit more about that? I think you mentioned something about we were going to try to address some people's vices and anxieties and what have you. How are we going to do that?
Well, one thing I know we will give ample space to sharing with the members our assessment of Cafe Ulu. So that will be certainly part of the conversation at the annual meeting. Also, because we have tasked ourselves with building a global cooperative economic platform, many of the workshops will be around that kind of work. So we'll be talking about the values of Ma'at and Ujamaa and how that gets expressed in a cooperative business model. Brother Shabaka, you mentioned after the break perpetual war, and we've been sold the idea in this country that there's this global war against terror. That is a hoax. What is going on is capitalism waging war in places around the world where people have resources that capitalist businesses want. So whether it's oil, whether it's coal tan, whether it's diamonds and other minerals, wherever wars are raging, rest assured that there are important natural resources in the ground or nearby that these capitalist corporations want unlimited access to. And not only unlimited access to, but they will actually take them from the countries where they are because that's what it is. It's a theft system. So even though, you know, there are countries that have all of these rich minerals in the ground, as these corporations come in and set up shop and extract them, the people in the countries remain poverty-stricken. And it's heartbreaking to see that, and so it really it drives us more and more to build a cooperative model, because in a cooperative model, rather than exploit the people would become a part of the cooperative itself, and they would be the first beneficiaries of the wealth that is being mined or drilled for, or whatever. The other thing that goes along with that is the way that a cooperative economy operates is it's sustainable. It does not do anything that is harmful to the environment or to people's health, whether it's a matter of breathing the air or drinking the water, or even if they have to work in environments, they make sure that the environments are safe for people to work in. So that's the difference. That's one of the major differences when we operate the businesses cooperatively. They respect the sanctity and the sovereignty of every woman and man and child. And they organize to tap into the very rich resources of the people and the land, and then use those resources to benefit the people and the environment. So it's an idea whose time has come. The world is waking up to the fact that we cannot continue to exploit and extract and wage war. It's simply not sustainable. And it's almost as though Mother Nature herself is saying, time is up. We must move to a sustainable economic platform, and that is cooperatives. And that's part of what we'll be talking about in the annual meeting. And even I need to say this because I realize time is getting away from us, Brother Shabaka. We are talking about organizing Ulu-based communities. These are communities in every major area where our people live. All the major cities where there's a million people or more, we want there to be Ulu-based communities that can interact with those communities, with those people, communicate with them the ideas, educate them around cooperative principles, organize them into us lifting us as members and owners, and grow this platform locally, nationally, internationally, globally. Let me stop there. There may be some questions, Brother Shabaka.
Yeah, thank you, brother. If you wish to join the conversation, just dial 929. We got about a few minutes left, only a few minutes left, 477-2789. I don't see any. The brother was talking about there's a number of workshops that have been suggested. You know, the committees are very working hard in order to probably address the question that might be on your mind, particularly with the closing of Cafe Ulu. As the brother said, just to give you a little bit of a heads up, you know, understanding cooperative, the politics of cooperative, you know, we need, if we're going to be that, we need to understand how we are and should behave and how members interact with each other in a productive way. The principles of my eye, which guides us, you got to have principles, values that direct how you operate a business. Establishing UBCs, as the brother talked about, Ulu-based communities in local areas. And the reason for these is that we come together, you know, we are in areas, we are in some neighborhood, some place, and for a lot of us, we are informed about opportunities or can be informed about opportunities that exist. We want to be mindful of those opportunities, particularly if we see that those opportunities that we have identified really is a need for the people in the community. We want to see if we can provide that need. And, of course, how feasible it is, because it always takes money, resources, in order to bring those things together. We want to make sure that we are solidly grounded on financial responsibility. And, you know, business research and development guidelines. Yes, go ahead, brother.
No, I was just going to say, we have to keep in mind also that $1.3 trillion flows through black hands every year in this country. If we were a nation in North America, we would be the fourth or fifth richest nation on the planet. So we have the wealth. That's the whole point. It'd be different if, you know, we were, you know, just digging around in the dirt, trying to figure out how we're going to survive. We have a lot of wealth flowing through our fingers every day. And what Us Lifting Us wants to do is to pool those dollars into a huge bucket and open businesses that are cooperatives that then in turn bring a return to the member owners.
Right. Well, let me give some context to that. You know, we only got a few seconds left. Nigeria, the largest country in Africa, nearly 200 million people, all right, gross domestic product is under $400 billion. Let me say that again. We spend $1.3 trillion. Their gross domestic product of a 200 million population, is under $400 billion. And we only 40 million in this country. All right, so that gives you some context about the spending. We're not quite as poor as we might sometimes think. We don't manage the money that flows through our hand properly. And so if you wish to participate, we really welcome you to that. If you're a member of ULU, go on the website. We're going to have plenty of information about the 2020 conference. If you're not an ULU member yet, you're thinking about it, and you've been, attending or listening to these programs, then check us out more. Call somebody. Call us. We got a number that you can call there. Brother, I don't have that number right before me. You have that number?
I had it. Yes, it's 404-592-2780. 404-592-2780.
Yeah, I just found it. All right. So, thank you very much. Yeah, so call that number or go to the website or send us an email, info@usliftingus.com. And we have plenty of information. We'll tell you about the workshops, the arrangement, and the itinerary for that weekend, the 13th, March 13th, 14th, and 15th. We'd love to see you there. Well, brother, I really appreciate you sharing your time with us today. Family member, I really appreciate you coming and joining us. Had some interesting questions that popped up. And we'll see you next week, next Thursday at 9 o'clock for Dare to Win.
Thank you, Brother Shabaka. See you next Thursday.
See you next Thursday.
Held us down, but now it looks like things are finally coming around. I know we've got a long, long way to go, and where we'll end up, I don't know. But we won't let nothing hold us back. We're putting ourselves together, we're polishing up our act. Going.